Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, going to take a look at Apple computers and accessories on the program. To begin, with Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist. He works out of Madison. He's been supporting Max professionally for the past decade or so, and it's great to have him back to talk with us. And certainly, if you want to join in, you are most welcome. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. That address, talk@WPR.org. Joe, great to have you back.
It's great to be here.
We've got the holiday season. People were out shopping up a storm over the weekend,
yes,
I'm
sure. Yes, they were.
I know it was busy. I stayed away. I didn't go out. I did not venture into the stores. But I know there were a lot of people out there. And what can we, what's selling or what's the hot item for Apple this season?
Well, you know, I was just reading the news about this, and there's two big products that, according to the analysts, are just flying off the shelves. And one, of course, is the iPad.
Yeah.
It's very attractively priced. The base model starts at $500, and people are just finding that this thing does a lot of stuff. People are actually looking at this thing going, you know, maybe I don't really need a computer. I can just use an iPad. It's got all the, it has most of the power of a computer without all the complexity of one. So I know a lot of people that have simple needs. The iPad is just what they needed. The other thing, Apple introduced new laptops, the MacBook Air.
Yes.
And they described it as what would happen if a Mac laptop and an iPad met. And apparently the entry-level one, it's 11 inches, and it's really, really thin and really light, and it sells for just a touch under $1,000. Apparently that has been extremely popular. So it's an amazing little machine when you look at
it. What does it do that, say, the iPad wouldn't do?
Well, the MacBook Air is a full laptop.
Full
so lap. It's running Mac OS X, so it runs all the applications that any Apple computer will run. So it will run iMovie and iWeb and Pages and Microsoft Word and Microsoft Excel and all that sort of stuff. What it's different than most laptops, besides being incredibly thin and incredibly light, I think it's 2.5 pounds or 2.7 pounds. It's very, very light. But it relies entirely on flash memory instead of a typical hard drive, which is what the iPads do as well. So Apple took a lot of the cues that they learned by making the iPad, making the iPhone, these very thin, light, very durable items, and they rolled that technology into their laptop and said, this has some potential. And apparently consumers agree.
Well, you mentioned hard drive, and I know we had an email from someone who was interested in optimizing the hard drive of his Mac. And
sure.
Can you comment on that?
Absolutely. You know, this is a question that comes up fairly regularly, especially when people are used to Windows PCs and there's a certain procedure you go through to keep your PC running at full speed. And they are looking for that same procedure on the Mac. And they're always a little confused when they don't see specifically the tool called a disk defragmenter. The short answer is the Mac hard drive does not need to be defragmented for a couple of reasons. Number one, the file system was designed so that it doesn't get fragmented from the get-go. It's very difficult to get a Mac file system to get goofy, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It does a very good job of keeping that organized. And the other thing is when files do get a little fragmented, the operating system will, if it has time, automatically defragment those files for you in the background without you having to do anything. And then lastly, Mac OS X will even rearrange files on your hard drive so that the files you use most are on the fastest part of the disk. If you think about a hard drive like a record player, the edge has a lot more stuff going on because it's moving faster than it does towards the middle. So the hard drive will automatically, or the file system will automatically put the stuff that you use the most on the fastest part of the hard drive. What you should do with the Mac to keep it up to date, run the software update. If it doesn't come up automatically under the Apple menu, just go hit the Apple menu and say software update and let it do its thing. The other thing you can do every so often is open up Apple's disk utility, lives in the utilities folder inside your applications folder, and check and make sure your hard drive is in good health. There's a little button there that will say verify hard drive. Click that button. It'll go through your hard drive. It takes a while, and while it's happening, your Mac seems to freeze. Don't panic. Just let it go. And it will come back and tell you if there's any issues, and then you can take action from there. But 9 times out of 10, Macs just pretty much handle themselves.
Sounds good. Let's go to Marianne in Oshkosh, who has a question for you. Hi, Marianne.
I have, somehow or other, we lost on the we lost the toolbar with not only the tool, the arrows and that, mm-hmm. and the Google, but then underneath where we had the favorites, not
sure.
the favorites, but. And I thought I got it back last night after this happened on Thanksgiving. I thought I got it back last night. I opened the computer up this morning. It's gone again, and I'm on. We've got Firefox. That's our main drive. We also have Safari, but we always use Firefox. And I don't know what to do. I don't know. I went to bed happy last night.
And woke up sad.
Oh, well, I woke up happy, and then I got on the computer, and I'm on this help menu and Firefox help menu, which did it yesterday, and I don't know what I did yesterday. I don't know. It's gone anyhow.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like you have a turkey that's out for revenge.
What?
Your Thanksgiving turkey is coming back to get you. No, this is actually pretty simple, and it happens fairly regularly. If you look on a Mac window, and you see in the corner they have the red, yellow, and green buttons, and we're all familiar with those. The red
right.
one closes it. The green one slides it, or the yellow one slides it down into the dock.
Right.
If you look at the opposite corner on the right-hand side,
yes.
there's a little clear button.
Right.
And when you click that clear button, that will hide and show toolbars. And that, not just for Firefox, that happens in Safari, the Finder, all kinds of programs, if you see that little clear button. So that's one thing to check.
I clicked on that and nothing happened.
Okay. The other thing you can take a look at is under the View menu in Firefox.
Yeah.
If you click on that, there's one, and the first item there should be toolbars.
Right.
And if you run your mouse over the toolbars, a little sub-menu pops out, and there'll be some...
Navigation and bookmarks, and you click on each of them, is that it?
You want to have a checkbook by each of those.
Oh.
So if those checkbooks disappear, you can toggle that item on and off, and that will make it show and hide.
Oh, just a minute. I've got it. It's not working.
Uh-oh. And there's a similar thing in Safari.
Okay, I did that on View. I've got a check mark on both navigation and bookmarks.
Okay, and did your things show back up?
No.
Try that clear button one more time. Let's make sure they're not hidden. I can't imagine they would be, but...
Now they did show up.
Okay, no, so it's you have to turn them on, and then you also have to make sure that they're not toggled invisible with that little clear button, because there's two switches, basically.
So there you go.
Makes sense.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Julie in Mount Horeb. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I'm having a problem with my iPhotos for
okay.
some reason. The hard drive that I initially work on filled up over the summer, so mm-hmm. I moved the library.
Okay.
And I had no problem getting photos in there, but over the last, 2 months, every time I go to import photos, either from a card from my camera or to either drag them off a different hard drive,
mm-hmm.
It crashes. It doesn't matter whether I'm doing 1 or 200. It will think about it, and then crash. It doesn't crash the whole computer. Just, you get that message, iPhoto.
iPhoto is unexpectedly quit, and can you do something about it? I think what we need to do, and I apologize, there is a library repair utility, and off the top of my head, I can't think of how you get to it. I thought it was by holding down the option key, but that's not it. That's where you can select different iPhoto libraries. Off the top of my head, and I'm sorry, I have been asked this question. I should know the answer, and I bet you one of our listeners does. There is a iPhoto repair function that I suspect you need to use. I just don't know how to get to it off the top of my head. I know Google will have this answer, and I bet you one of our listeners will have this answer.
Okay. Otherwise, I can always check the Apple support.
Yeah. It's all of this stuff is stored in a database, and there's a routine you can go through that will kind of check out the database and make sure that it's properly, everything
aligned.
Is the way it should be.
Yeah.
I just don't remember what it is off the top of
okay.
my head.
And I've tried rebuilding the library itself, and it always unexpectedly quits and can't complete that task either.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So I don't know because I'm trying to I'm sorry?
Yeah, I'm afraid
that's a little different.
Yeah, I'm afraid you stumped me right off the bat.
Okay. All right, well, I'll keep listening. Thank you.
All right.
Somebody else may have an answer for that one. By the way, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question, or maybe you've got an answer to that last question here. Pat in Green Bay, let's go to you. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I hope you can help me. I'm computer illiterate, and even though I have an Apple. But what happened is we had a power surge in the house.
Okay.
And my wireless printer no longer recognizes the computer. They're not friends anymore.
Got it.
How can I get them to be friends?
Well, the first thing we'd need to do is, is your Mac connected wirelessly?
Yes.
Okay, so you can get to the internet just fine from your Mac.
Yep.
Okay. What kind of printer is this?
It's an HP.
Okay. And did that HP, I suspect what we'd probably want to do is, and this is going to depend on the exact model, but we'd probably want to do is reset the printer to its factory defaults. And I don't know exactly, there's either going to be a menu on the front of the printer that will let you do that.
Okay.
But basically we'd want to get the software that came with your HP printer, and they should have a setup utility. And basically want to reset it to factory defaults. And then go through their initial setup steps, because I suspect what happened was it just lost its configuration.
Yeah.
You don't think it has any... I'd have to redo this into the router?
Well, it shouldn't... What we're going to do is we're going to... If you run through these configuration steps, and this will vary depending upon exactly what kind of printer it is, should...
We kind of went through those steps, and
okay.
it poops out a little sheet that says that they're not compatible,
That they're not compatible? Well, that wouldn't make any sense.
And I'm wondering, I have a disk to put in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
If I uninstall the HP that's in my computer now, or throw it in the trash, and then put the new disk in to reinstall, would that do it?
I can't say for sure. What sounds like has happened is the HP printer needs to talk to the same wireless router that your computer is. And we know that the computer is talking to it, so that's fine.
Right.
So the trick is we have to get the printer talking to that wireless router.
Yeah.
And that's why I was suggesting if we go through these initial setup steps, I don't know that deleting the printer on your Mac is going to really make a difference.
Okay.
We have to establish that link between the printer and the wireless router. Now, I'm assuming that this power surge didn't damage anything, and that's you can't necessarily say that by visually looking at it. You don't know
because I do print things on it,
right? But it may have damaged some little chip that handles the wireless part. It's somewhat unlikely. I'm just putting that out there as it's a possibility. It's reasonably unlikely.
Okay.
So I'm afraid without actually being in front of the printer, it's kind of hard to say. But if we can get the initial. And a lot of times, the ones I've set up, you actually connect the printer with a USB cable to your Mac. You run the configuration utility, and then it sends the configuration information over the USB cable to the printer so that the printer can then talk to the wireless router. I don't know if your setup steps have taken you through that or not.
What is this USB cable? That's not that net cable, is it? Or whatever they call it.
Well, there's usually two cables that a printer will come with. One will be the power cable, and the other is a USB cable. And there's a connection on the back of the printer, and then there's a similar one on your computer.
Side.
And the one on the computer, the symbol looks a little like a pitchfork.
Yeah.
And on your computer, the end will be flat, is really really thin and flat. And then the one on the back of the printer is more like a square with the corners cut off on the top.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, little hard to do over the air, but I suspect if you can go through those setup steps, I think that's your best bet.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Joe Rhodes, our Macintosh support specialist, with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will take some more Apple computer questions right now as we move along here with Joe Rhodes, Larry Mueller here. Rebecca in Green Bay, you are next. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I also have a question about iPhoto. I've been working with Mac for about a year, and I have a friend who's been with it for just a month or two. We're both having the same issue. When we import photos from our SD card, and then we go to use them, say to upload to Facebook or to email to a friend, they kind of seem to disappear for a day or two. And when you click on Left Import, which would have been the one you just did 5 minutes ago, they're not there. They're not able to use. And so I kind of came up with a little shortcut. I have to save the one I want to put on the desktop because I can know where it is on the desktop. But then, like, in a day or two, like, there are those pictures that I was yelling at the computer, wondering where they were. So where are our pictures going, or what step are we missing, or where are those pictures located immediately after upload?
Well, depending upon exactly which version of iPhoto you have, but if you've been using it for a year, I'm assuming you have a fairly recent version of iPhoto.
It's in March, yeah.
Okay. So the if you look up at the left-hand column there where you have the side panel, at the top it says library, and then usually iPhoto breaks it down into events and then photos and then faces and places and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Photos literally is all of your pictures.
Okay.
That's like the iTunes master library. Events is a different way of looking at those same photos. So they basically group photos that you took all in one day.
Okay.
And they assume that, okay, you took all these pictures in one day, so this must be a single event. Call it Thanksgiving dinner or whatever it might have been. But they should be in that library somewhere. But the chances are, let's say if your the date is off on your digital camera, they may not get sorted correctly, because a lot of what iPhoto does is predicated on the date stamp of the photos. So this happens to my mom a lot, where her camera battery dies and it goes back to the year 2000. And then all of her newest photos are in this really bizarre place in her library that she can't find. And it's because her camera battery has died. If you take a look at the photos view of your entire library, you can look at these things and it'll kind of organize them based on how you imported them. And you can, there's a little disclosure triangle, so you can collapse them and then start looking through and go, okay, where were the ones that I took most recently? If your camera date is not set correctly, they could be sorted incorrectly. And I suspect that's probably what's happening.
Okay, so the guaranteed place to find them is just in...
in photos. That's the master collection, or in events, because the events is just another way of looking at your entire library.
Okay.
The thing is, they might be sorted oddly. So if you can't find them down at the bottom where you expect your most recent photos to be, look further up and see if maybe the date was wrong and now they're parked way at the top for some reason.
Okay, very good. We will try that out next time.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's been one of my beefs with iPhoto is it's so dependent on that date that if the camera date is wrong, it really can make life difficult.
John in Marshfield, we're on to you now. Hi, John.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Question for Joe and Larry.
Okay.
Your views on the product by Apple called the Time Capsules. In the past, from reading reviews on it, it didn't get a very good rating. What is it, your views now, currently?
Sure. The Time Capsule, basically what it is a combination of a wireless router. So, for example, if you have a internet connection, say a cable modem or DSL or something like that, it will take that internet and spread it out to all your different computers and phones and whatnot, all wirelessly if you want. In addition to that function, it also has a hard drive that's built into it. And the idea is that this would work hand-in-hand with Apple's Time Machine backup program as a big bucket where you can store your backup data from your computer. And if you've got several Macs, this is kind of a handy way because you can have one central bucket instead of having to have a external hard drive that you would plug into each Mac. Now, it's a neat idea. The problem is, in practice, the wireless connection tends to be a little slow if you have a lot of stuff to back up.
Correct.
And that is one of the places where this becomes a little problematic. Now, if you have a desktop Mac and you can plug a cable from your Mac into the Time Capsule, that problem isn't as big because the cable is much, much faster than the wireless. Or if you have a laptop and you're not doing a ton of stuff on it, but you want it to be backed up, you know, fairly regularly, then it works okay because your data is reasonably small. But I suspect the bigger issue that people have with that is just the speed with which the backup happens, which is why you buy a Time Capsule, because you can buy an AirPort Extreme, which is the same thing without the hard drive. If you only have one Mac, or you only have, you know, maybe one Mac and a PC or something like that, my preference is to just connect a USB hard drive directly. It's much less goofing around. It's much faster. And quite frankly, it's cheaper. If you have a whole host of Macs in your home, let's say you have four or five, well, then having four or five external hard drives not only gets confusing, but it gets expensive. Then a Time Capsule starts to make more sense.
Joe, I only have one, so it makes more sense.
Yeah, I would say just get a simple $100 USB hard drive, you know, Best Buy, CompUSA. Well,
sure.
CompUSA doesn't exist. Apple Store, wherever you happen to go.
Sure.
Plug it in. Yeah, that's the simplest way of
all.
That's
what we do.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. And Larry, did you get your dinner?
No, I did not.
Oh,
but
no.
I saw a few and had a great time in the woods, but no deer this year for me.
I thought you would get the one like they did with that Mustang in Richmond Center, a 300-pounder.
I was hoping, but no such luck.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good one.
Thanks, John. Paul and Madison, it's on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Question on keeping my Mac clean. I've got a whole bunch of old files in there, and how do I know what I can get rid of? Is there a janitor service? Is there, you know, something I should be downloading that can help me figure out what's safe to dump?
Sure.
Or is that just on me?
Well, it's mostly on you. The thing is, the Mac, the files that it's creating, it takes care of cleaning up after itself. So, for example, you know, your web browser has a cache, and those files kind of accumulate after a while. It takes care of deleting the old ones that it needs to. So you don't actually have to go in there and throw those out. If you're, you know, feeling industrious and you want to be, you know, very hands-on about this sort of thing, you can throw away your own caches. And it's simple enough to do. They live in your library folder. There's a folder called caches. And you can pretty safely throw everything away inside of the caches folder.
Okay.
Generally speaking, though, as far as, you know, if there's applications you don't use or things like that, you can throw those away. I would avoid throwing things away in the system folder or the main library folder. Or for that matter, I'd be a little cautious about your home library folder.
Okay.
The better question, though, is, are you running out of hard drive space? Is your hard drive starting to get full? I mean, if...
Well, I've got about 32 gigs left. I've loaded up my Mac Pro, which is a 08 version.
Okay. So you probably have like about a 250 or 300 gig hard drive in there?
Yeah, I got the maximum I could put in there.
Sure.
And memory. And, but I have a lot of video. I do video editing.
Yeah.
So,
generally speaking...
I do off-site store those.
Because we were kind of talking at the beginning of the hour about how to keep your Mac hard drive performing as fast as possible. And one of the key things to keep in mind to keep your computer performing, and this actually goes for Windows too, you want to keep about 10% of your disk space free at all times.
Mm-hmm.
When you start to drop below that 10%, the Mac has to work much, much, much harder to keep the files in a contiguous state. And that's a nice way of saying it's just the fastest possible access.
Right.
So if you've got 32 gigs left on a 320 gig hard drive, you're hovering right around that 10% area.
Mm-hmm.
Chances are most of the, if you added all the applications, your operating system, and all of these, you know, files that the system creates, you're at most going to be talking about 7 gigs. The lion's share of that is probably your video files. So if you're finding yourself hovering in an area where you're routinely at 10% or less, my suggestion would be find yourself a larger hard drive. And it's not that difficult, actually, to swap out a hard drive on a Mac. You can find utilities, and there should be instructions online. Apple might even have official instructions on their website. You can plug in an external hard drive, a newer one, via USB. Basically, you make a complete clone of everything that's on your Mac currently onto this external hard drive, swap out the two drives, turn on the computer, and you're back to exactly where you were before you began this procedure. It's fairly straightforward.
Is that a pretty simple, to clone everything, don't you have to go through each individual file?
Nope. Oh. There's a utility, and actually I love it. It's a free utility. It's called Carbon Copy Cloner. And it will make an exact duplicate of everything on your current hard drive onto a new one. And it's one of those things, you start it and let it run overnight. Really, the hardest part about this is when you buy the hard drive, you have to find some way to connect it to a USB port so that your laptop can see both of these things.
Right.
And then, you know, if you're fairly industrious with a screwdriver, you take apart your laptop, and it's not actually as hard as you might think if you've got the right tools. You just take the thing apart. There's a website, MacSales.com, where I think they sell kits that will give you a little device they'll sell you the hard drive, a little device to connect it via USB so you can see both at the same time. I think they even give you the tools, or you can buy a little tool pack that will let you take the bottom off and swap out the hard drives. If you're, you know, even a little mechanically inclined, not that hard.
Right. Well, interesting.
Yeah, and you can buy hard drives, laptop hard drives now. I think they're upwards of 500 gigs. I think they might even have terabyte ones now. I'm not sure.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't
it though? Amazing. All right, there you go.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
I should point out one other fun website. If you are thinking about undertaking a repair on your Mac yourself, there's a website, and I love it. It's called ifixit.com.
Hmm.
And they will give you detailed, step-by-step, with-picture instructions on how to take apart practically any Mac. And even some of the most complicated disassembly procedures, they will show you right how to get to the very core of a Mac. You know, and some of these procedures are really easy. Some of them require a lot of guts. I've done a couple of them, but it's a fantastic resource because they show you every screw, every latch, everything. So if you're thinking about trying this and you want to just see what you're in for, take a peek on ifixit.com and get a feel for, you know, hey, this looks really easy. Oh, no, that looks way too hard. I'm going to have someone else do it.
There you go. We had an email from Patrick who said, I've read that some people have had their iPhones turned into bricks after putting them into a Bose Soundtrack 2. Most people have had no problems when they've done this, but Patrick's wondering, should I worry about this as a gift for an iPhone user?
You know, I have this vague memory of reading something about this, and I believe that Apple and Bose were working on it, and I don't know if there was a solution to that or not. I suspect that with the most recent iPhone operating system upgrade, that has probably been taken care of. And that's, you know, easy enough to apply those upgrades. You plug your iPhone into your Mac and iTunes will pop up and there's a button there that says check for updates.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't flag you on its own, you can all manually go in there. And the current version is iOS, I think it's 4.2.
Okay.
And so I would say, you know, before they plug it in, just as a precaution, make sure the iPhone or the iPod Touch has already been upgraded to the most recent version. But I don't think I would be afraid of it.
All right.
I'd plug mine into one.
All right. Carrie in Madison says, I have a Mac at home and an HP at work with Outlook Calendar. I'd like to get a phone with a calendar that I can sync with both my work calendar on my HP and my husband's calendar, which he has on his iPod and Mac computer. Do I have to get an iPhone, or are there other smartphones that will be compatible with both? Do I need special software if I don't get an iPhone?
Well, the question would be at work, where you have Outlook and you're using your calendar and your mail and whatnot, what is Outlook connected to? Because if it's connected to what's called an Exchange server, which is Microsoft's email and calendar server, and Outlook is the client that lives on the PC, if they have an Exchange server, then this is pretty simple, at least for the iPhone and the iPod, because these have built-in Exchange support. And when you go to add a new account, there's a button there that says Exchange, and you tap on it, and then you tap in your username and password, and it'll add your email, your contacts, and your calendars, which is where Outlook from the Exchange server, which is the same place that Outlook is getting it from. It's very handy. Yes, other smartphones do support this. I know that Android does. I don't know about Research in Motion. I will be honest, and this is probably going to sound a little tainted, but I've set up an Android phone once for a client. It was not the most obvious thing to me, but then I've gotten a little spoiled. But I know that they will do it. I'm not sure about the BlackBerry devices, but I'm fairly certain that they do.
Okay. There we go. Let's go to Kathy in Medford next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an older Mac Mini.
Okay.
And we have wireless in the house, and it looks really good. The problem being is that I have an online business, store, eBay, and Etsy that I sell, and my workshop is like 300 feet away from the house.
Okay.
So wireless doesn't reach, and so I'm taking my photos out in the shed, and I have to run back to the house, you know, to download them and to print my labels. I want to update, but I'm not sure what to get.
Sure. So you're interested mostly in, can you get that wireless from your house to your workshop?
If I could, you know, if there's some way to get it out here. When we built our shed, we put a phone line out. So, and I actually have one for the computer, but we didn't know we needed to put a FireWire in.
Okay. Well, you shouldn't need FireWire, but if you can, and I don't know how difficult this is, and I don't know what kind of phone wire they ran, but if it was done fairly recently, typically they use what's called Category 5 or Cat 5 cable. And that will run phone signal, but it will also run computer signal.
Okay.
So if you have that wire there, you may be able to use that wire to carry the signal via wire from your house to your shed. Or I don't know how difficult it would be to actually string another wire over. 300 feet is kind of a ways.
Yeah, we would have to dig it.
Yeah, and that sounds like a whole lot of work. So you might want to check with a phone cabling person and see if maybe your existing wire has the capacity to do this for you.
Okay.
The other thing you might try, and I apologize because I'm not an expert in this area, but I know the devices exist. There are high-powered Wi-Fi systems which are directional, and they have basically these antennas that you have to point. And so you would put one at your house and you'd point it at your shed, and you'd put the other on the shed and you'd point it at the house. And because they're directional and they're high powered, they're designed to go over longer distances.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid I don't know. You're not going to be able to walk into Best Buy and pick these up.
No,
there's something you'll have to look online and find.
Actually, I think something like a hawk, I was told that might work, that maybe I could put it in my garage and point it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I looked at them and I wasn't sure what to get. And then I thought, well, maybe like a laptop that I could take back and forth, but I still wouldn't have the signal out here.
I was going to say that the laptop still won't, it'll have the same problem, as the signal just doesn't reach that far.
Uh-huh.
You might be able to get away with just one of these directional antennas and just point it at the shed. If that doesn't work, then you would get two of them, and they would talk to each other, and then you'd have a cable that would come off of the one in the shed that you would plug into whatever computer you want. But I apologize, my knowledge kind of gets a little sketchy in that area.
Yeah.
But I know they exist because I know people do them. Farmers use them, actually, when they want to get internet to a building that's just too far away from where their internet comes in.
Okay. Well, now let's just go back to the computer.
Mm-hmm.
My Mac Mini is going to be 5 years in April.
Okay.
How secure? I mean, would you upgrade that? And what would you think? Would you stay with a Mac Mini or go with one of these new, like, laptops?
Well, the Mac Mini at 5 years old, that's probably a G4.
Yeah.
And I have a client that uses one, and they're good, solid machines, and they're tiny, and they run a good long time. I don't know that there's much there that you can upgrade. By the time
to like a 10.4.11 or something.
Yeah, and you could go to 10.5, but I don't know that I would recommend it, just because the machine is kind of old and kind of slow. So if the machine is doing what you want, there's no reason to run out and upgrade it.
Okay.
But if you're looking at, you know, just looking at, well, it is getting old, maybe I should get something else before it dies, or if there's something you want to do that the machine isn't capable of doing,
mm-hmm.
The new Mac Minis are really fast. And again, they're even more compact than the old one. They're a nice machine, especially if you have a monitor and you have a keyboard and a mouse.
Right.
It's a pretty good value. If you wanted to get something nicer, you know, the laptop has the advantage you can carry it back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do have files up at the house that you want to put and then work with them at your studio, the laptop is a nice option for that.
If I were to get a new Mac Mini, mm-hmm. and I got this pointed back and forth through the shed, would they talk back and forth with my 10.4 talk to the new Mac Mini? Could I network them together?
Yes, you can. As long as they're all on the same network, yes. So if you want to, say, share files that you have on the Mac Mini so you can copy them over, chances are what you'd want to do, though, is Apple has a migration assistant. When you buy a new Mac, there's a little program called Migration Assistant that will actually take you step by step through vacuuming everything from your old computer onto your new Mac. It does a fantastically thorough job. Photos, documents, applications, everything. Chances are you would just want to do that, and then everything that had been on your Mac Mini will be on your new Mac.
Okay.
In which case you don't need to network them.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's turn to Jeff in Galena, Illinois. Hi, Jeff.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I've got with probably a pretty basic question, but it's been baffling me.
That's okay. After a tough question today, I like basic ones.
We have a wireless printer,
mm-hmm.
And a MacBook Pro.
Okay.
And the printer actually came as a promotion when we bought the MacBook.
Sure.
And I can't seem to find where to set the default. It only wants to print in color. And I know, like, if I'm in a Word document or something like that, I can go into preferences for that document and have it print in grayscale.
Sure.
But in the Windows world, I can go and set as a default to have it print in grayscale, and I'm wondering if I can do that on the Mac.
Sure. Yes, you can. And it will depend on exactly what kind of printer it is. But in the print dialog box, so let's say you're at a web page or a Word document or whatever it is, and you say print, there is a couple of drop-down menus. One of, you know, you've got the little button that says how many pages do you want, what paper size, and there's usually a drop-down menu that will give you all kinds of different options.
Right.
For example, I'm in TextEdit, and I've got an HP LaserJet set up, and so there's one for layout and paper feed and finishing and color quality options.
Yep.
If you shop around in there, you will find an option that will allow you to print in black and white versus color.
Right.
And like this is going to be dependent on upon exactly which printer it is. Once you have that, if you look towards the top, at the top of that dialog box, the first one says printer, which you get to pick which printer you want. The next one says presets. And once you have all of the options picked out that you want, let's say you want it on, you know, legal size paper and black and white and something else, you can save that as a preset. And the advantage there is the next time you print something, you just have to pick that preset and all of those options will come along for the ride.
Okay. And I'll always, if I'm not, say I'm not in a document, but I'm on an internet page or something and I want to print that, I'll get the same dialog box or a similar
correct.
One. And
correct. Very, very, very similar. And what I have noticed, because I had a color laser printer that I preferred not to print in color with, that when I – it seemed to default to that same preset that I had no matter which application I was using. So as long as I used that printer, it always remembered, oh, well, the last time you used this printer, you wanted black and white, and it picked that automatically for me, so I didn't have to do anything.
Okay.
There you go.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And, Joe, thank you so much.
It has been a pleasure.
And again, your website, joerodes.com, if mm-hmm. people want to take a look at that.
Absolutely.
And Rhodes is R-H-O-D-E-S.
Yes.
Joe, thanks a lot.
Great to be
look
here.
Look forward to your next visit. Joe Rhodes is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. He's been working with Macs for at least the last decade and knows an awful lot about them. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that is the way it always works. But he'll be back. We'll do it again. Coming up, it's got to be the last Monday of the month because I'm looking here and seeing a couple of tall, not strangers, a couple of guys I know pretty well, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, our weather guys, to talk weather and climate next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.